The big question is this: how does a beauty professional who is amazing at their service actually charge what they're worth and avoid attracting clients that are a pain in the butt? How do they become the go-to expert in their space and get their creativity and ideas shared with others so they can build their following without being stuck behind the chair or in their salon?
Those are the questions, and this podcast has the answers.
My name is Jordan.
And I'm Katie, and welcome to the Real Beauty Bosses podcast.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to Real Beauty Bosses. Jordan here, and today I'm going to be talking with Caitlin Shook. She's a microblading specialist based out of Lubbock, Texas, and she's incredible at what she does. Today she's going to be talking to you guys about starting from scratch, taking risks, investing in yourself, and she's also going to be telling you guys about a special service she provides now called the Signature Brow. And hopefully this interview serves a lot of value for you guys first getting started out, and how you can grow an extremely successful business in a short period of time. So I'm super excited to introduce you guys, Caitlin Shook. Let's go ahead and jump right in. So today I have Caitlin Shook here. She is a microblading specialist. She is, you're 22 years old, right?
Yes.
Awesome. And you started your business how long ago?
About a year and a half to 2 years ago, I think.
Awesome. So you're getting at the point where it's more than just, I see, is that your fiance in the back?
He's creepy. Yeah, he's getting water.
What's going on?
Yeah.
Awesome. So you've been kind of, you know, you learned all your services, how to do microblading. You're working on actually, you know, kind of doing your own thing as well. Mm-hmm. But you're at the stage now where you're trying to really figure out the best way to attract clients, manage clients and things like that, right?
Yes.
Today, I kind of just want to share this for, you know, maybe people who are in your similar situation where, you know, they're maybe just getting started out with, you know, whether it be, you know, in a salon or any beauty service, you know, spas, massage therapists, things like that. It's kind of similar. You know, you get started, you learn your craft, right? And you get really, really good at it. And then you have to figure out, you know, how do I get people to want to come so I can give them my service and show them how good I am? Because yeah, no matter how good you are at something, you'll never be able to share that or, you know, give out your services so people can see it until you can get, you know, a client base and things like that, right? What I want to do to just get started is maybe hear maybe what your backstory was. You know, take us way back to where, you know, you thought that this would even be something that you wanted to pursue. Was it something that, you know, kind of just came out of the blue that kind of just fell on your lap? Or, you know, maybe tell us how you got started with microblading.
Yeah, so I was actually attending Texas Tech at the time, and I was getting my advertising degree. And I knew pretty quickly that that was not what I wanted to do with my life. And I was starting to get a little anxious because I was, you know, coming really close to the end of my degree. And I just knew that that was not going to make me happy. There's no way I could, you know, I don't really want to do work with anything of that sort. I didn't want to have to, like, I wanted to, you know, work on my own schedule and, you know, make my own living the way I wanted to. I wanted to have more control of my life and do something that I, you know, somewhat remotely liked more than advertising. So my mom actually went and got her eyebrows done and came home and told me about it. And she just joked about it, saying that, like, maybe I'd like to do something like that, you know, make my own schedule. I still got to pursue my creativity, you know, and making women feel good about themselves. I still got to have, like, one-on-one relationships, and I got to interact with people. I just didn't have to sit behind a desk and read stuff and, you know, make other people, you know, happy in that type of sense. So, we looked into it, and I became friends with the woman who actually ended up doing her eyebrows, and she decided to go ahead and start training, and I was one of her first students in that line of work. So that's just kind of how it started. And she was so incredibly successful by the time she started training that I really could see that, like, this could be a possibility for me if I just found the confidence in doing it, which I did, but that's kind of how it started. It was all just a...
Yeah, it kind of just, it was probably perfect timing for you, right, as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Texas Tech, which is funny. We didn't even know each other at the time.
I know. Yeah. So random.
We walked the stage on the same day.
Yeah. So that's, yes.
But yeah, like, I can completely relate. You know, when I first got started, you know, I majored in psychology. So, you know, this was never something that I was going to plan on doing. And I just needed to find a way. You know, I was going through a lot of rough patches at the time, you know, mm-hmm. kind of getting close to that graduation date and not knowing, you know, what you want to do still.
Yeah.
That's what you've been, you know, going to school for and studying is so you can, you know, get a career and figure out what you want to do. I still had no idea. Yeah. Right? And I had, you know, obviously a lot of things getting thrown at me, you know, bricks being thrown at me financially, you know, personally, mentally, you know.
Yes.
Hard to, you know, kind of step away from, you know, the whole party scene at school and, like, kind of focus and figure something out that's going to mm-hmm. really, you know, set the pace for, you know, what you're doing in life, right?
And, yeah.
So that's, you know, when I first got started, it was really, I was, me and Katie and a couple of my friends, we were just trying to find a way to, you know, make some money and also you know, be able to help people, because, you know, I think we're all put on this planet so we can help other people and, you know,
yep.
share a story and things like that. But it's tough sometimes to find out how you're going to do that. And
yes,
actually, just to give you my backstory, we started out, I'd say we wanted to find a way to make money, online, because we were in school and it was hard to, you know, I was already working like multiple jobs while going to
yeah.
school. It's not like I could just go, and I was getting paid decent, but it still wasn't enough to really, you know, be where I wanted to be. We started really like studying some aspects and things like that so we could try to make some money online for ourselves. And then we picked up a few tips and tricks along the way that we thought would maybe be better suited to help, you know, other people. So we could like test them out people when we first got started. And that's around the time that we found a couple different people, including you. I think you were you know, one of the first handful of people that we had ever worked with.
Yeah.
That was awesome. We kind of just were trying to test out our services, and it ended up working really well for you, right?
Yeah, it did.
And so that's where we kind of propelled ourselves to kind of, you know, go from not knowing what we wanted to do, and then it just kind of, you know, fell in our lap, kind of like what you just stated.
Oh, yeah.
Then we just stuck with it and tried to get really, really good at it and try to help as many people as possible. But, you know, it's hard to really over plan because you don't know what's going to happen. So you just really.
Yeah, when you don't know what to plan for.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But that's kind of how we got started. And, you know, where we're at now, we went from, you know, just helping a handful of people to, you know, being able to impact a lot of people. You know, some we're really trying to focus just on beauty service providers, because I feel like mm-hmm. that's one of the biggest gap lies. You know, there's so much education on how you can get really, really good at your craft and things like that. For that, but how do you also, you know, attract attention, grow your personal brand, and like kind of, you know, grow and scale your business, you know, because, you know, it's tough, right? It's
yeah, tough. No, for sure. Gosh, I feel like I'm still trying to figure that out. There's a lot of bigger competitors in the area that have, I mean, I guess that's been like a huge challenge for me, is just trying to get my name out there whenever there's already really big established artists other than me in the area. I feel like a lot of it, word of mouth, if you really encourage word of mouth, I think that has been a huge deal. But social media is the ultimate, like door in, like it's the ultimate way to get into, you know, get your name out there, you know, socialize, network, things like that. That's been the most helpful. When I started out doing it before anybody really knew about me, and I didn't really know how to market myself or get my name out there, I really just let my work speak for itself, but that can only get me so far if I want to expand my clientele and things like that. So, obviously good work does, you know, come in handy, but, you know, you have to keep up with the times, and you know, you want to grow in clientele. So it's just been a growing experience. It's never ending.
Yeah. I think, you know, I completely agree. You know, like it's a lot of people, sorry, I've got some bugs flying on.
Oh, you're fine.
I think a lot of people, you know, take, you know, social media and things like that for granted. They use it as entertainment rather than a tool.
Yes.
And it really is like the way that people are able to connect with people nowadays. Like, you know,
yeah.
You know, things are changing so rapidly. Like think about it, a year ago, you know, I didn't even know how to use Facebook hardly at all. I never,
yeah.
And I would just look at stuff. Right. And then like,
yeah.
I saw all these people were, you know, using it to connect with, you know, the right people and leverage their, you know, just telling your story on a day-to-day basis, you know, you start to get people's attention. And,
that's yes.
how it begins. And so, you know, I think a lot of people look at it more of, you know, I don't want everyone seeing what I'm doing, and, you know, I yeah. want to, you know, in my little bubble, but, you know, if you want to, you know, be successful in business and things like that, you know, it's really the most helpful to just, you know, share, you know, people aren't going to know about what you do unless you share it with them, right?
Yes, yes.
They're not going to have, like, a vested interest in you unless you give them a story and a message. And
a reason, yeah.
Exactly, and so that's kind of, you know, the main purpose and goal of what we're doing here is to really try to, you know, help people, you know, be able to leverage not just, you know, using social media and things like that, but, you know, knowing how to actually create attention and awareness
yes.
on yourself and your business, because with enough attention and you get everything kind of set in place, then mm-hmm. you kind of have a system for yourself that you just need to, you know, keep repeating over and over and over again, right?
Yes.
But back to, you know, how you first got started. So you were trained. How long did the training take for you to get really good at the craft?
Well, the training in this type of industry is a lot like cosmetology. You have to, you know, you get the training and you do the classes and you learn the, you know, material that you need to learn, but you have to, you know, work up to the hours. So once you have so many hours worked up to it, then you can start working towards it. Really, I think it took me like maybe 6 weeks, I think six weeks. I want to say about 2 months to really like be able to legally do it on my own. But it was just really hard because those types of classes are pass fail. Like you have to prove yourself. You have to, you know, kind of like have the hand, you have to I mean, it's really a lot about technique. It's really, it's just pass or fail. And you have to prove yourself. And I think overall you had to have at least like 300 hours of like holding the tools and, you know, working with the tools and having actual live models and things like that. So I feel like anybody can do it, but not anybody can, you know, get through it, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. I mean, how long did you say it took, but when you started to the point where you actually were able to, was there like a certification?
Yes, there's lots of certifications. I obtained 3 different certifications before I went to the state, to try to get my license to work legally, you know, cause you do have to have a legal license for the state and things like that. So overall, I mean, like I said, I think it took about 6 weeks overall. So it wasn't very long. Mm-hmm. Whenever I decided to do it, I pretty much had it done for the most part.
Awesome. What was it at when you first got started was, really what you were looking to accomplish? Was it just a way to, you know, get the freedom of the lifestyle, or did you really, it kind of just was like, wow, you know, I just learned how to do this, you know, I'm gonna, you know, kick some butt and get, you know, how did you kind of, you know, What was your real, you know, desire to go through, get certified, mm-hmm. and, you know, launch your business off the ground?
Well, to be completely honest, growing up, I hated school. I hated sitting at a desk and listening to teachers, and, you know, I hate when people are telling me what to do and things like that. And I also did not enjoy working in retail and them making my schedule for me. So I kind of went into the industry for selfish reasons. Mm-hmm. And then, like once I got into it, I had no idea that I was actually going to love it and be extremely passionate about it. And so I guess like my main drive and motivation in getting into the industry was because I didn't want to sit behind a desk every day and I didn't want anyone else to be my boss, but I ended up falling madly in love with the actual job and what it calls for and bettering myself and becoming a better artist and, you know, extended trainings and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. And what was there any kind of, obviously, you wanted to, you know, make some money at the time.
Yes.
This was, how old were you at the time when you first got started?
I think I had just turned 20 whenever I found out about it and heard about it. And right as I turned 21, that's whenever I started really pursuing, you know, the license to do it and to working with it. And so I guess at 21 is when I really started my business and began to pursue it.
Okay, awesome. Was there any point where you kind of hit a wall or there was a struggle along the way when you first got started?
It was not cheap starting off. I had to take out a loan for school and an LLC and all the proper legal stuff like insurance. So, there was a point where I was looking at a brick wall that I probably wasn't going to be able to get over anytime soon because it was a lot of money, coming out of the gate. And then I also had to develop a portfolio. That was hard because you have to build trust with someone to let them, you know, tattoo, you know, for you to tattoo them. So I guess those were really the two main things. Big challenges and struggles for me was trying to get out of that debt, prove to myself that it wasn't, you know, it was worth it and it wasn't just a risk and I didn't lose everything, and then getting it all figured out legally and to do it the right way, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. What was, if you don't mind me asking, what was the starting cost of the program to get started with the training?
For the actual class? Mm-hmm. I think I had to take two classes for my whole thing and they were $6,000 each. So overall, it was $12,000 just to take the class, and I think $3,000 total for the I'd say it was about $4,000 or $5,000 to get all the product that you need, like the materials and tools and things like that. License and certifications were probably around $2,500, and that was before rent or anything like that. Trying to find a, you know, studio and location and things like that. So I think overall before it I was in a good close to 20,000 hurting. So it was definitely a big risk. Yeah. Huge.
I think that's kind of my, you know, story starting out too. Like, you know, we were in college when we started our businesses and, you know, it's almost impossible to just, you know, without investing in yourself at all to know what to do and figure
yeah.
out. And so like, you know, education and training and, you know, learning from the right people is super, super important, right?
Yeah.
I think, you know, a lot of people think that, you know, after, you know, they go through a period where they go to school for so long, you know, they're just like, oh, I'm done. They throw it away, right?
Yeah. And,
they stop learning. They stop, you know, educating themselves. And mm-hmm. I think that's why a lot of people get stuck, because you have to constantly keep learning, keep investing
yes.
in yourself and things like that, right? So when you, that's obviously a huge jump, right? You know, being in college, you have to take out that loan. What was the
process
of doing that, if you don't mind sharing?
Because honestly, I was so young at that time. Now I understand it better. But at the time, I just, you know, presented my parents with my dream and my idea, you know, because they're the ones who kind of got me into this thinking, you know, that maybe I can do this. Yeah. And really from that point on, I kind of let the financial stuff be taken over by my dad. I got a lot of help from him, because I was so young. I did not know how to pull a loan. I didn't know how to properly do that. We ended up pulling a loan out of my dad's business legally. And I do, you know, like pay, I still make payments like everything else, things like that. But it was like a legal loan through him, that I was able to do it because, I think I was so young at the time and I really didn't have much credit to show for it. So no bank would really help me out with that one.
I was in the same place too. You know, I had to pay for everything during my, you know, while I was going to school, and it's tough.
Yes.
And so luckily I had a little bit of help from the, you know, family, but not that much. So like, I really had to figure out, you know, how the heck do, you know, I get loans? How do I, you know, maybe make those payments? Like it's not something that you're really ever taught. You kind of just learn as you go. And so I know how stressful that can be, but it just takes kind of, you know, jumping into it and, you know, making the commitment and then figuring the rest out later.
Yes.
I think how all of us end up being successful is just pushing ourselves to make that.
Yes. You have to take that. I mean, if you do it, you've already done it. You're all in and you have to make that risk on yourself and just do your best. There's no going back at that point.
Yeah. And so far, do you feel like that investment in getting started, about that $12,000, maybe even a little bit more, you feel like, you know, are you confident that things are going to be working out for you?
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. I genuinely think that like it's going to pay. It's already pretty much paid off for the most part. I'm still living, you know, comfortably. I, you know, there at the very beginning, it was a little scary. I didn't know if I was going to make it or not, or if I was going to be able to prove myself or not. But yeah, it's definitely been proven to be worth it. And yeah, I don't regret anything. I don't think. Not yet.
Good. Not yet.
Yes.
Hopefully that day doesn't come.
Yeah. Yeah.
So tell me a little bit, like, when did you, was there ever a moment that you kind of, you know, after you got started, you went through the training, you were first, tell us maybe like, when you, what was the kind of the step-by-step process? Like, okay, I'm trained, I'm ready to start my business. How do I, you know, get started?
Gosh, it was a lot of waiting around. I think for the most part, it took me about 4 or 5 months, maybe longer than that, to even be able to legally do my job. After the classes came through, you know, we had to wait for our certificates to come into the mail. And since I took multiple classes, I had to wait for multiple certifications to come through. And then whenever those came in, we had to send them off to the state and pay for, you know, the state licensing, things like that. Once you had the state license, you know, basically had to, you know, buy enough product and material to have a business. But then I also had to find a location that would zone me. Because as a cosmetic tattoo artist, you have to have a building that's zoned as a tattoo parlor. Yeah. So it's kind of hard finding a salon that was willing to zone their salon as a tattoo parlor. A lot of people would not take that risk on me. It was still kind of a foreign thing. It wasn't super popular just yet. It was getting in there, but there weren't many, you know, salon owners that were willing to pay or help me pay the $2,000 to zone the building and things like that. So once I found a place that would zone me, and I had all my product and things like that to start building, I had to have a portfolio. So I didn't actually start to make money. I still paid about a month's rent before I started getting clients and paying for things and it really starting to kick off. So I'd like to say it was about 5 months or 5 or 6 months until I really got to start doing my job.
Yeah. And that's probably not the funnest thing to do.
Yeah, no, I thought it was going to be great and I could just start out of my house, but there's a lot of laws that come into place and I can't tattoo people out of my house. So it's a lot harder than I thought it would be getting started, but
like, I didn't even have known that. Yeah. You know, no one ever told me like how much, you know, you have to really do before you can just, you know, start putting a needle.
Yeah. You have to have so much paperwork that I didn't know existed before you can actually do it, you know, so.
So that, how long did that period take?
That took me about 2 to 3 months. I probably could have gotten it done faster. But I didn't already have a salon that zoned me and that makes it difficult. Normally women who go into this industry, they already have a salon that they can work out of. So whenever you send all your information to the state, they automatically put you towards that zone location, but I didn't have one yet. So that slowed down my process a lot.
Okay. Yeah. That's, I'm sure like figuring all that out though is like, you know, it's not easy to just go, you know.
No, it is a lot harder than I thought it would be for sure on the legal stuff.
So after all that, what was kind of the next steps? So you got all your paperwork done. Did you, how did you start looking for places and actually finding, you know, the place that you're in now?
I still remember I was working in a retail shop, like a mom and pop retail store, and I remember on my slow days, I had a notebook, and I wrote down every salon, every med spa, every medical place that would offer it or allow it. I wrote them all down, and I literally just started calling and marking them off the list. And I actually went through every single one of them that I could find online and still couldn't find anyone. The place I'm at right now was actually suggested to me by another girl that I went to school with, and she was going to start working out of the salon because they already zoned for her. And I thought it was kind of weird that we would have two artists in the same salon, and I didn't think the owner would let me. But she ended up letting me. Her artist ended up moving right before we got certified. So I ended up being the only one there. So it was really lucky. That was probably the hardest thing to get through was finding someone that would let me zone their salon and work out of it.
Yeah, I can see, at least you hustled on that. And, you know, a lot of people would just kind of like take their time.
Yeah, I almost gave up on that part.
But it's good that you stuck with it, because I think I can even relate to that. You know, when you're first getting started, you have to really like make a list of people that you can either, you know, get in contact with that are going to help you grow your business.
Oh, yeah.
And so, like, you really have to be very, I don't want to say aggressive, but you need to, like, you know, put in that work as much as
yep.
you can get started, because you could have all yes. the world, but if you never get started, who cares? And so, yeah, I think.
Yeah, and yes. and I couldn't really sell myself. I couldn't really sell myself to other artists, or I mean, not other artists, but other owners, like business owners, because at that point, I couldn't legally build a portfolio. Yeah. No, I had two models from school and then two other models from a different class. So I basically had four faces to show them to prove myself, and that just wasn't enough. So technically I couldn't even, you know, prove myself to anybody to find a place that was willing to, you know, put that risk on me or, you know, put that pressure on me. So that was totally luck, I feel like.
But you got, how did it go when you did find someone that would be willing to take you in? Did you, did they?
Whenever I found someone. Do what? I'm sorry.
Did they like reach? Did you? Were you contacting them regularly, or did you send out some messages? How did
yes.
they connect with that first? I guess with the owner of the location that you're in right now. How did you guys connect?
So I actually got really lucky. Most other salon owners would make you pay for that zoning fee and make you do all the zoning information and things like that. But the owner that took me in, she ended up doing the paperwork for me, doing all the legal documentation because it's her salon. You know, ultimately. She, you know, I was zoning her salon for a tattoo parlor. So she wanted to make sure we did it right. And she plans on hiring other artists like me down the road. So she offered to pay for that and deal with that. But there had to be a lot of communication between the two of us because she needed all the information on me. She needed to know my insurance company. You know, she needed my license in her, you know, possession to go to the, you know, to go to Lubbock courthouse and zone our salon and things like that. So it was a lot of getting to know each other well before I stepped foot into the salon, for sure.
That's awesome. And were you the first, you were the first microblading specialist there? And is there more now? Or?
There's not any now. No, I think I'm staying busy enough and I'm bringing in enough traffic. I don't think she's going to want to bring another one in just because, I mean, I can handle enough of the traffic. We're still trying to build me. And we're all like individually owned. Like, so we don't necessarily work for her. I'm just bringing traffic in for her, basically. So I'm still the only one, but originally there was going to be another girl that I took her place. I mean, I basically took her place is what I did because she ended up moving.
Awesome. So how long has it been now that you've been in, your location?
I've been in Salon 505 for exactly a year now, I think.
Awesome. A year. Yeah. Do you have a little anniversary or party?
I feel like I deserve one. It'll be in November. So maybe.
That's awesome though. I mean, you're kind of now like getting to the stage where you're getting real creative with your craft as well. Maybe tell a little people about how you went from just starting out with microblading, kind of developing, creating what you call the perfect brow, right?
Yeah.
How did that all come to be?
So I actually ended up growing a really good close-knit relationship with the lady who trained me. And she was super confident in me. You know, I've definitely proved myself through the class, and I just grew a relationship with her. When I brought my microblading technique back to West Texas, it was a little bit more of a struggle because the environment is different here. People's skin types are different. I'm a light-handed artist whenever, you know, it takes, you know, kind of a heavy hand to do microblading, things like that. And so thankfully with my college education, I knew how to properly, you know, do my own research and, you know, read up on my own studies. I was able through my trainer, I was able to connect with people and network with people to learn more, figure out what I was doing wrong, what I was doing right, things like that. And over like the first like 4 to 5 months, I just wasn't satisfied with microblading. I felt like there was a better way and it was easier to do. Like there just had to be something better than that because I wasn't satisfied even though they were.
Yeah.
And so I was connected and I met with the lady who actually created the pigment that I use. She is in Las Vegas. She was actually helping the lady who trained me come up with a new technique that they were just going to share to their, I don't know how to explain it, like the people that they've trained so far. It just kind of be like their descendants, I guess, through their trainings. And they came up with this new procedure, this new technique that's more high-end. It's European. It looks exactly like microblading, but it's just a little bit more advanced with technology and things like that. And we now use machines to do our microblading for us instead of a blade. And just with a whole bunch of, studies and education behind it, they just found out, better ways to offer, better services and better products to last longer and be more worth the money that they're spending, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. So for everyone who may be, watching this, what could you maybe explain? So the perfect route, something that you kind of developed and tweaked into your own, right?
Yes.
Maybe explain like what that is and how it's different than microblading. Cause I feel like even I, when you first told me about it, I wasn't sure exactly, I don't know the details obviously, cause I'm not.
Yeah.
And so maybe you could get some insight as to, we got the background of how it came to be, but mm-hmm. what is the perfect route that you kind of coined for yourself?
Yeah. So microblading is performed with a blade. It's not any extra technique other than your hand and a blade. You dip it in the pigment and you slice the skin and pack it with pigment. My procedure and my technique that I use is I use a nano microscopic cosmetic machine. The blade for microblading is made up of 12 to 14 microscopic needles that make a blade. My machine that I use is one of those needles. And it's the same concept as a tattoo gun, but it doesn't go as deep. And it's, microscopic, it's super, super tiny. So it gives you really fine hair strokes. And basically I use it as a pen and I do the microblading procedure, but with the machine. And it goes a little deeper than microblading. So it lasts much longer and it's more detailed and, it's immensely better than microblading, due to like trauma to the skin, and scar tissue and things like that. So it's guaranteed to give you a better result, but it's not, as traumatizing to the skin as microblading is.
Okay. Awesome. So, and is that, that's been kind of what you've been trying to leverage and use the most for the clients you work with, right?
Yes. I am the only artist in this area that offers that.
Awesome. So maybe tell us a little bit, how you kind of go through like a consultation, and how you kind of like figure out what's right for, your clients when you first get them started.
Yeah. Okay. Normally whenever they come in, they haven't heard very much about me or they don't know how to do research about me, or typically they come in cause they don't really know what to expect. So I'll bring them in and let them fill out some paperwork just so I have documentation that they came in and I, have something to remember them by. We get the medication things out of the way that I need to know about them. And then we talk about I start by asking them what they know and what their expectations are out of the, procedure, or, what they're thinking, that's come out of this. And then I start off from the very beginning of like what type of pigment I use, how the procedure goes, what type of technique they think would look best on them, we figure out what's the best technique for them. And then I go through the whole procedure of how it works and, step by step of what it's going to look like and what to expect after, things like that. I try to educate them as much as possible, especially on my pigment and the tools that I use, just to comfort them and to build that trust with them, because it's good to educate the public. So, the word gets out that So, really, I just use the consultation and I explain to them, from the very beginning what this is and what there is to expect out of it. And then I explain to them, how their specific procedure would work. And after we kind of talk about it, I go in and I map them out. I listen to, what they're expecting and what they want out of it. And I map them out and we choose the color and I write it down and I take pictures. And so we're ready whenever they actually book the appointment.
Cool. And did that, did you kind of know how to do all that at first? Or I feel like that's it's unique for everyone how they do their consultation. Mm-hmm. Like, is that something you kind of picked up along the way? You just kind of figured out what worked best for you and how you could, because I know from what I've heard, like your reviews and recommendations, like you're very, very thorough on how you do these consultations. You want to make sure that you find what's right for them.
Yes.
So like, is that something that you've kind of just taken notes on as you, did them over and over and over again and figured out kind of the best process?
Honestly, I feel like it's just muscle memory type thing. I didn't really offer consultations in the beginning because I didn't know how a consultation should work, what the point of it was. I didn't really understand why I would have a meeting with them before the actual procedure and not get paid, things like that. But I think the more I'm in the industry and the more professional I get and the more education I get behind it, it's actually more useful for me to meet with them ahead of time and get all of that information out and know exactly what they want when the day they come in. Because it takes up so much of the, you know, precious time that you have, you know, the 2 hour block, you don't want to explain the whole procedure to them and then have like the last 45 minutes to do it. You know what I mean? It's a lot of information and it's a commitment. So, really I just kind of cut the first half of the normal procedure in half and use that first half for the, you know, consultation basically. So, it's just basically a huge introduction to the procedure before they come in and we actually get it done.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. And so that's been pretty successful. You kind of, ask questions to find out, you know, maybe if they want to do microblading versus the perfect brow, right?
Okay.
Awesome. So maybe one question I did have for you, along, you know, your journey as you've gotten to where you are, was there ever like one like aha moment, that you had that's kind of, you know, you were struggling with at the beginning, that kind of, you know, you tried something new and it's like, oh man, this is great. Whether it be, you know, I know that we had some difficulties with bookings and things like that and like cancellations and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Was there ever, you know, one point that you experienced, you know, kind of like an epiphany moment almost that kind of like, okay, you know, I've been doing this wrong.
yeah.
I have to, you know, make this change and now, okay, this mm-hmm. is a problem. Was there ever a moment like that for you?
Well, I came into the industry and I have never had a ton of confidence in myself. And I think that's what really like cut me short in the beginning. I just didn't have a lot of confidence. And so, when I had clients coming in the first, you know, first procedures, I charged them, you know, the money, but I was always too afraid to charge them full price. And I was always afraid to, you know, charge for touch-ups because I knew they were going to come back and I wasn't going to be satisfied with the results and things like that. So, I was really bad at selling myself short. I was really bad. I mean, I know I was still in the very beginning, but I was super bad at giving free procedures and offering free things and, you know, cutting myself short by like, you know, you're not worth that price yet. You should just cut it in half, you know, things like that. And, if people really want to get it done, they're willing to pay for it. They're not going to book the appointment for you. They're not going to book the appointment with you if they can't afford it, you know, and you're proving to yourself, you know, you're capable of doing it. I was just selling myself short that whole time. So, I mean, I was working, you know, 8 hours a day, busting out 4 to 5 women a day to start out with because I was so broke. And I was just barely getting me by. And half the time I was working for free. And I think that was like the moment I was like, Caitlin, you are good. Like you know what you're doing. You're good at your job. No more, you know, selling yourself short, no more working for free, things like that. Because I would have people book appointments and not show up. And I would have, you know, I would budget myself for the week on like, you can spend X amount of money. This is the money you set aside for product. This is the money you set aside for rent, things like that. And I'm working for free. Like, I think that was just the moment where I just decided like, you can't do that in this industry. Like you know, I'm working for money. I wouldn't say that was just like my like grand, you know, epiphany or whatever, but, I just thought I needed to ease myself into it and prove to myself and prove to everybody else that I was worth the money, but that's not the case. I mean, I was hurting myself more than I thought I was.
Yeah. I can completely relate to that. I mean, when we were first getting started, obviously when you first, you know, are starting something completely new, you do need to get, you know, practice and get good with it.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, you can kind of, you know, try things out, for free or highly discounted and things like that. Just so you can kind of, you know, get the repetition going, right?
Yes.
That's exactly how we grew our business. And starting out, you know, we wanted to, you know, trial, things that may, you know, may or may not work, based on, you know, the research and, you know, almost our kind of certification.
Yeah.
Our own. And we wanted to make sure that would actually, you know, be able to produce the results before we felt comfortable, you know, charging for them. And,
yeah.
We kind of got into the habit for a little bit that we would do that with everyone. And mm-hmm. A lot of people, you know, would take that free for granted and you would never really, like, you'd be working for free and, you know,
yeah.
When, you know, you already know you can produce results with, like, you know, it only takes one or two, you know, good times of doing your job and, you know, you get awesome results and, you know, capture a testimonial or something like that, or just, you know, document it. That, okay, so, you know, I know what I'm doing. You know, other people can see the social proof that, you know, even if it's only a couple people, you know,
yeah.
That, at least you, you know, have helped someone, you know what you're doing.
Yes. Yes.
At that point, then you can, you know, people will pay what you're worth, right? And you have to
know
what you're worth, but it's sometimes like hard for, you know, any of us just starting out to feel comfortable, you know, charging, you know, $500,000 or more than that.
Yeah, exactly. And I just didn't know when was a good time to finally start to do my, you know what I mean? I didn't know when I had proven myself. And so, you know, I was in it 4 or 5 months and I was still doing free procedures because I wasn't confident in myself. And, you know, I was already, you know, my clientele already existed. You know, I was getting good reviews. I was having people come back for touch-ups and they looked great. I just wasn't confident in myself. So I was like, oh, I'm not really satisfied with that. Like, let me give you free touch-ups, you know, things like that. And, you know, that's not how it works in the real world. You know, So I definitely do think I could have organized that better. There was a better way of organizing that and coming up with those guidelines. But, you know, I figured it out down the road.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, that's you know, the real reason that we're trying to connect and, you know, do videos like this and stuff. Because, like, if people could learn from, you know, struggles that other people have faced and kind of, you know, prevent from doing that by learning, you know, what they've done to not have to go through all that. A lot of people, right? That's how, you know, kind of we our strategies. Like, we didn't just come up with them and try to figure it all out. You know, we like very, very successful people that are doing what we're doing. And I know that you kind of have that close relationship with the one who trained you, right?
Yes.
He kind of, you know, kind of hold your hand, or at least when you first got started, kind of help you along the way when you got started. So you didn't make, you know, too many mistakes. We all make mistakes, right?
But
it's so helpful to, you know, learn from someone who's done what you want to do.
Oh, yes.
First, so you can kind of at least follow some of their, you know, path, and then
for sure
you get confident enough, then you can start branching out.
Like, and that's, I think that's exactly what it was. I was probably her most annoying student. And she probably thought that right off the bat that, oh crap, like this is going to be the annoying one. You know what I mean? But, I never stopped being annoying and we just grew a friendship out of it. So
you know, you have to be like a sponge. You have to ask questions. You have to, so like, as annoying as it may sound, like, I think, you know, it's honestly probably was helpful for, the girl you learn from as well, because she, you know, in order to teach someone, you really have to be an expert in the field, right?
Yep.
So it was probably helpful for her to kind of, you know, really share her struggles and stories and things like that, and kind of.
I have definitely challenged her a few times. I've asked some questions that she could not answer, so that actually helped me network. Where she would always direct me to other people that could answer my questions, and I built relationships with them and things like that. So that has been helpful.
Super. One thing I did want to ask you too is, you know, what did you ever kind of sit down and map out like a plan, like a business plan, where you set some goals for yourself when you were first getting started? Or is that something you are still continuing to kind of work on, is doing that? Like, what plan have you kind of at least since you've gotten started, have you ever like mapped out a plan that would help you get to a certain goal?
Yeah. So, whenever I took the class, she had given my mom a pamphlet before I ever even thought about taking the class, before she even really was serious about it. She would just had a pamphlet of, you know, the class that she took on, you know, if you have 10 clients a day, you make X amount of money, and that's X amount of money for the year, you know, really reeling people in to take the class. I definitely took the class and I used that pamphlet for my plan. And you know, like, my first 2 months, I'm not going to have 10 clients a day. You know, that's probably, you know, not going to happen, 10 clients a day or anything like that. Of course, if I was in, you know, Dallas, Fort Worth, like she is, possibly. But, so I did have a long-term plan, and I still resort back to that every once in a while, but I feel like my plan changes every month. I have different goals each month. I want to hit a certain amount of income a year, you know, things like that. It certainly is not as dramatic or as large and as grand as my first original yearly plan, but I mean, it's still a goal down the road. I'm not going to throw that plan away because I can't accomplish that. And every month that I get closer to the new year, I'm proving to myself that plan I originally made for myself, that's completely way out there, it's becoming more and more real every day.
Yeah, I can completely relate to that. Like, for me, like, I started out setting like kind of, you know, little baby goals and things like that.
Yeah.
And I would maybe, you know, hit them, but it would take me a longer period of time to hit them.
Yeah, than you thought originally.
Mm-hmm. And when I started, like, you know, creating goals that were just monster goals, that, you know, I kind of, you know, looked at or wrote down, you know, on a daily basis, was when I started to really, you know, see the vision of where I was going. But I also had to kind of hit those, you know, write down the goals that I wanted to do on like a monthly basis, on a weekly
basis.
Yes. So, like, yeah. I think everyone should, you know, kind of have that one, you know, monster goal plan and things like that. But
yes.
Also, like, you can't just have that in front of you and expect.
Yeah, you need to break it down.
Yeah. Like, you know, what's my 5-year plan? What's my 3-year plan? What's my 1-year plan? What's my, you know, 1-month plan? You know,
because if
you kind of reverse engineer it all the way back, that's how successful. And so, like, even myself, like, I've kind of, you know, gone through where, you know, I wanted to, and I'm still, you know, working on hitting, you know, goals that I set out for myself. But the best way I've seen it is you got to have the big goals. But you can't, like, I made a big mistake along the way where I would only have, like, I would just write my big goals down regularly. And I thought I was, you know, all right, I'm kicking butt. I've got these awesome monster goals. You know, I'm going to, you know, this is my plan for $1 million.
No, exactly. You have to, I mean,
Like,
you're not going to do that tomorrow.
Like, what do you have to do on a day-to-day basis to keep yourself on track for that? You
yes.
Know, like, step one, step two, step three, like, break it down on a daily basis. And so
you need to make it possible for yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. That's hard to do. You know, you really have to, you know, test things and try things out. And,
yeah.
any entrepreneur or business owner, you know, has probably at one point, you know, you don't just get in here without a goal or a plan.
Yep.
The more you can kind of document, write those things down, I think it makes mm-hmm. you know, what you're doing.
So, yes.
What would you say that the biggest conflict you've experienced thus far since starting? Like the one, like hair-wrenching, just crazy, like tough, you thought you'd never figure it out. Like, was there one moment where it was really just like,
oh. I actually have this moment every day, and it resorts to the same issue every day. I think us as cosmetic tattoo artists, like it's our job to educate the public. You cannot walk into a tattoo parlor and get a cosmetic tattoo. It does not work. It will not look the same way. You will walk out probably with scars or real tattoo ink in your face that's going to turn blue in 2 years, you know. The public doesn't know the difference between a tattoo artist and a cosmetic tattoo artist. They're two totally different things. Legally, a tattoo artist can perform cosmetic tattoo procedures, but it's not the same thing. And so I have gone back to school and I have obtained my tattoo removal license because I think about 25% of my income is washed down the drain weekly because of women who have previously had work done by a tattoo artist, and I cannot help them. I can't correct that. I can't remove that. There's no help for them unless they go to a doctor and they get them removed by a laser, you know, technician. So that is my gut-wrenching, yes, that is my gut-wrenching issue. Do what?
I know you've been sharing, like, that's been a huge conflict in your guys' area.
Yeah.
You know, people, you know, just doing unprofessional work, and it's like, botching some people up, and
it's a daily thing for me now, and it makes me sick. And I figured out who these artists are, and professionally, you know, you don't do anything about it. You just try to educate the public. But there's only so much you can do to prevent women from dealing with these things and suffering from these things. I mean, really, I think that is the most painful thing that I've experienced, and I don't know how to fix it. I don't know how to prevent it. The only thing I can do is hope and pray that my word gets out. And that people are more educated and they do more research before they, you know, walk into a tattoo parlor and get their face tattooed, if that makes sense.
Maybe for the people who would be watching this that don't know about that, when did you first like start finding out about that? So like basically was it one artist or multiple people who were just kind of doing work that wasn't as maybe you could share the story a little bit so like everyone can get a good feel for like how real of a problem.
Yeah. Well, Lubbock, Texas is a fairly large town. I mean, I'm not going to say it's a city. It's not the size of Dallas, but there are three well-known cosmetic artists in the area. Unfortunately, the word cosmetic doesn't mean anything to people here. They don't know the difference. There's two cosmetic licensed artists in this area, and it's me and one other woman who owns a cosmetic tattoo company. We've both been in the industry for a while. She's been in it for about 10 years, and I've only, you know, I'm going on two. But there's another artist who is a very big deal. He's very well known. He's been on a TV show. He's super famous. He's a big deal. But he has no government record or documentation of ever being certified for a cosmetic tattoo license. So basically saying is it is legal for a tattoo artist to perform cosmetic tattoos. There's no law set in place to prevent or protect clients who don't know any better. So basically anybody can just walk into a tattoo parlor shop and they legally are allowed to do or perform a cosmetic tattoo. Yeah. The only difference behind the two things is I can give you a tattoo on your arm and it's going to look totally different on your arm than it is on your face 10 years from now. So tattoo artists will use tattoo ink and they will use the depth, of a regular tattoo whenever those are two totally different things. Tattoo ink is made out of chemicals and cosmetics are typically plant-based. Yeah. So whenever I first started to realize this and I first did my research, I started having women come in to me with blue eyebrows or they're super botched. Like, I mean, unbelievably, like, I don't know how in the world they even walked out of the building without wanting to murder these people. Botched. And that's just how I started to do my own research because I was thinking, how in the world could a cosmetic tattoo, you know, end up as blue as this? Or, you know, I mean, I had my own questions. I was not educated enough myself to answer their questions. And so it was freaking me out. And that's why I went back to school for removal to figure out where it was even coming from. And now there's just a big feud in our small, like big small town about the three artists because only one of them are not actually a cosmetic tattoo artist. It's just a tattoo artist that thinks that they can perform cosmetic tattoos, which.
Yeah. That's crazy, because like I'm sure, like I know when you first kind of started notice about it, I saw you like something about it.
Yeah.
Is it something that like you can fix, or is it something that, like you said, you know, for some cases it's like they have to go, you know, to a surgeon to get it removed?
Yeah. Gosh, I've had women so desperate that they will pay their deposit to book the appointment with me. And come in, and it's basically a big gamble. I mean, there's some women I can help. There's some women I'm capable of removing that tattoo. For some of them, I can cover it. But once you get a chemical in there, or once you scar your face like that, there's no going, I can't help you. I mean, you have to see a technician to get it removed. So it's really just a gamble. You never know what you're going to get, really. I mean, it's all different. And it could, most of them are coming from the same artist.
Yeah.
But they're all different cases, really.
That's crazy. I like, that's insane. So is it like, what have you kind of done to raise awareness about it? You said that you and another girl have been noticing it in your area.
Yeah.
What have you guys been kind of doing to kind of prevent anyone else from having this problem?
Professionally and just ethically, you don't call the person out. You don't call that specific company out. You're not going to tell people, don't go there. You know, they're going to, you know, they're not doing it properly. And really just recently I've made a relationship and a friendship with this other artist who's actually a competitor. You know, we've actually become friends, and we've kind of helped each other through this process, because there's still some that she sends me pictures. I'm literally 8 years less than her in the industry, and she still asks me for help sometimes. And really the only thing that we've tried to do to prevent it, because there's nothing else, I mean, we're as educated as we can be in this industry at the moment. You know, we're as advanced as we can be to help these women. The only thing that we can do is just try our best to educate the public without pointing fingers, because that's the most professional way of doing it. And that's really all you can, that's all you can do, is just try to prevent it from happening to anybody else.
Yeah, I think so. That's crazy. Like, I can't believe, like, it's I've seen the pictures. Like, it's been real disheartening. That's saddening. Like, crazy.
And there's a specific code. If you're a cosmetic artist, you don't shave the eyebrow. You use plant-based pigments. You go by hair strokes. You don't go deeper than the dermis layer, things like that. And if people just did a little bit of research, they would know better. But this artist is literally doing all the things you're not supposed to do. So we're just trying to, like, really tell the public, like, if they shave your eyebrow, don't go to them. If they use chemicals, don't go to them. You know, things like that. Mm-hmm. Easy things to watch out for.
Absolutely. That's crazy, though. Hopefully, like, there's probably a lot of people in other areas, like, doing the same thing.
Yeah, probably.
What do you think the solution to that may be? Like, I guess, like, since microblading and, like, permanent makeup is, like, kind of really starting to elevate in the audience for it, who people are actually looking for it, it's increasing, like, crazily. So I think, like, what advice could you give for people who are maybe looking to get that done to make sure that they do it right?
Yeah. If they're looking to get it done, if they're, like, potential clients or prospects to get their eyebrows done, my greatest piece of advice is just do research. You don't want to go to a tattoo artist to get a luxurious, you know, cosmetic procedure done. It's like, you don't go to the dentist's office to get injections. You know what I mean? Like, they don't go together. They may still be, like, along the same lines, but it's two totally different things. Just do tons of research. I personally feel like word of mouth isn't good enough. Sometimes you need to do your own research, because, you know, the artist that we're dealing with and struggling with, that person is still being continuously, you know, suggested on social media and things like that. So just do as much research as you possibly can, and ask a lot of questions, and maybe talk to people in the industry, you know, that, you know, what do they think? Because it's in the beauty industry. It's not the tattoo industry. It's the beauty industry. So, you know, people talk, there's ways to do proper research and prevent things like that from happening to you. And be super picky. If you go into the procedure or the consultation, be picky and ask them challenging questions. Make them show you the map before they go in. Ask them questions about the pigment that they're using in your face. Yeah. You know, do a trial run, things like that.
Yeah, I think that's really, really good advice, because I think a lot of people may be, you know, just looking for low prices on it. And like, it's not like you, I don't even want to say you get what you pay for. But
no, it's not even the issue anymore, sadly.
You gotta make sure that, you know, you're you know, working with a professional.
Yes.
I mean, everyone sees your eyebrows, so you gotta keep them looking good, right?
Yes.
So, like, that's crazy. One last question. But at the end of this, I'm gonna kind of, I told you I collected like 100 different questions from people who are in the beauty services industry that have a lot of questions based on, you know, the business aspect of side of things. And so what I'd like to do is kind of just ask you a couple more questions here, and then we'll get into kind of almost like a little rapid fire. I'll ask you just some that I've received from people who are curious, you know, how people like yourself are doing structuring their business. So
okay.
Last couple questions I had about you and your story and what you're doing and how you've gotten to where you're at. What do you feel has like been the number one achievement that you faced? I guess not faced. What's the end result of, you know, from when you first got started to where you are now that you feel like has been an achievement for yourself?
I wouldn't say it was an issue. It's definitely been a learning experience to get to where I'm at. But before, I didn't know if I was going to get paid 1 week. I didn't know if I was going to have a client 1 week. It wasn't necessarily up to me. If I really needed money that week, I didn't know how to get the client, or I didn't know if I was going to get paid. I may just not, you know, kind of go hungry that week. But now I've consistently and like, I've really, really worked hard to where I'm at now. I have a clientele. And so, you know, if I want 9 clients this week, I have a way of making it happen. If I want a really busy week, I have it. You know what I mean? It's more in my control now than I thought it would be. Before, I thought it was a limitation for me that I only get paid if someone books an appointment with me. But now it is totally an advantage, because if I want to book an appointment right now, I can find a way to book an appointment right now. I can find someone that wants to get their eyebrows done. You know what I mean? I can, you know, basically tell myself how much I want to make this week and make it.
Yeah, and that's a good place to be in right now. You're really in control. And, you know, I faced the same difficulties, you know, when I was first getting started, like, how the heck am I going to get anyone to pay me money? And, you know, you put in enough work and effort along the way, and you kind of get to the point where, you know, if you do it right, you develop the ability to where you know the skills that you mm-hmm. get people who want and need what you have to offer. So
yeah.
To touch base on that, what do you feel has gotten you to that point? How do you kind of, you know, you say now that you have the ability to, you know, make as much as you want, what do you feel has really been that deciding factor to be able to do that for you?
A lot of it is going back to social media. I have enough followers, and, you know, with y'all's help, I mean, it's a lot of it has been completely rooted to the help that I've gotten from you. Like, I have leads now. I know that there's X amount of people who are interested in me and my work. And then also there's just random people floating around on social media that are interested. And I work in a salon with, you know, 10 other hairstylists. I can find, you know, people. It's not so much of me trying to be invasive or me, you know, trying to talk people into it, but there's always someone willing, you know, there's always someone interested, whether or not it's the price that's the issue, you know, things like that. Someone will come, you know, and book the appointment.
Yeah. I think that is like one good thing about, you know, working in a salon where there's a lot of other people there too, mm-hmm. rotate, you know, services and referrals and things like that too. So it's very helpful. Before we started working together, I know that first, maybe you could kind of share how that experience went when we first did that giveaway and like how the process went when you started to discover your ability to generate leads.
Yeah.
Because I think that's an area like a lot of people in like don't know what a lead actually is. How you can actually, you know, attract attention with some different methods and things like that. And not just, you know, I know we did like a giveaway.
Yeah.
But we didn't just, you know, do a giveaway to do a giveaway, right? There was a purpose.
Yeah.
That generated leads, and we had to follow up with those leads to be able to
yes.
the door, right? Maybe kind of share, like, you know, when we first got started, what was your thought process on how that was going, and then when did you actually start seeing the results from that period?
Well, before I ever met you guys, before you ever even contacted me, I was growing gradually but slowly. You know, I didn't know where to attract people. I didn't know who were attracted to me or who were interested in me. It was just slowly growing on its own. And around the time that you guys found me, I was ready to grow. I mean, I was ready. I needed to grow. I was time. Like, I was excelled enough in my work and in my artistry that I was ready to grow and, you know, start pumping people through. Yeah. And so whenever you guys did the, giveaway, I, you know, at first I was thinking, oh crap, like I'm going to do a free, you know, $400 procedure for what? Like, you know, why am I going to do that? But, we launched that giveaway and I saw that like what 700, you know, people were interested in me. They're interested in my work. 700 people were willing to give me their phone number and address and email, you know, for this procedure that they were super interested in. Not saying that, you know, they were interested like enough to ask the price or things like that, but there is a percentage of them that were. There are a percentage out of them that, you know, aren't just participating in the giveaway. They were actually interested. And I think through that like 700 people, you know, the word got out about me and people started talking. That's how your social media grows. And you have 700 phone numbers, 700 emails that you can reach out to and you can bring them in. And, you know, not all of them are going to respond to it, but you did bring in a percentage of that. And not only that, but those people are talking. That's sharing my business. It's sharing my name, you know, social media. More people are seeing it. things like that. And I feel like that just really like kicked it off. And the, every time we do another one, people start talking, and they don't even really have to enter in the giveaway or be an actual lead through that giveaway. They're, you know, they're interested. They're liking my page. They're following me on social media. They're asking questions, things like that.
And I think like, the number one thing that, is, you know, kind of that we know for a fact is like, you know, any discounts or giveaways that shouldn't be like your process to get, you know, clients.
Yeah.
It can be used as a tool to like get attention on you, because it's going to cause, you know, everyone's going to, you know, be more likely to take interest in something that, you know, they can get info and, you know, get a little information and give away. You know, I would love to at least, you know, get to know like what she's giving away. What is micro?
Yeah.
And so like the approach that we like to take that's worked great for you so far is, you know, use something like that to get the attraction and, you know, you collect those leads, which is the name, email, and phone number. So you can contact them at any time, and then you just follow up with them and you can kind of give them tips on, you know, why, what is microblading? Why would it be right for you? You know,
yes.
You know,
yeah.
And you start to build a relationship with people, like the ability to do that, and have a process to do it kind of on autopilot has been super awesome. And,
yeah. It's been helpful for me.
Exactly. Cause like it kind of, you know, a lot of people, you know, are kind of scared to invest a little money into, you know, advertising or things like that. But like if you, and you don't have to invest money, but it'll make the process a lot faster, right? If you because you were already doing giveaways, right? When we first.
Oh, they weren't near as successful, obviously. But yes, I was trying things like that.
And so like, it's just about how can you like leverage something like that where it would get a lot of attention and turn it into, you know, convert leads into actual like customers.
Yes.
And I did want to talk a little bit. We never really got to talk, so we've been using that messenger bot strategy for you too. Kind of driving some of the people we've already collected into that. How has that been working out for you so far? Have some more people kind of been inquiring and at least getting to, maybe you could explain kind of how that process worked and how it's worked so far.
Yeah, so I believe it's an ad, right? It's an ad asking them if microblading is right for them. Yeah. I actually haven't seen this ad myself because it's just, it's everywhere, you know. But basically it's just asking them if microblading is right for you. And then, you know, you go into Messenger and take this quiz. Well, through the quiz that they're taking, they're also gaining a lot of, you know, interesting facts and, you know, things like information about the procedure, if it's right or wrong for them, things like that. And I think that alone has, you know, brought them into my inbox so I can start up a conversation with them or, you know, touch base with them or, kind of just ask them like, hey, are you interested in this? Would you like me to answer more questions? Things like that.
And is it, have you gotten a lot of people come through, through that? We just started it like a day or two ago. So.
Yeah. My phone's been blowing up. I feel like I'm really far behind. I think I've actually messaged like 5 people back, but there's been much more since then. I just being sick, I, you know, let that slip a little bit, but yeah. Yes.
By the way, too, I'm sure, you know, this probably isn't the, you said you were trying to get to bed like pretty soon from now.
No, you're fine. You're fine. I have nothing else going on today. So
I really appreciate you, you know, taking the time of your day to do this. And hopefully you can give kind of some feedback as to how that new strategy we're using. Because that I saw was like a big gap when we first got started too, is like when you get all those leads, like those 700 people, like you have to, you know, there's a lot of questions that you pick up the phone and call 700 people and answer all those questions for them. So like hopefully, you know, the way that we can automate that all for you will kind of get, you know, all those questions answered, because you know, the one gap from a lead and a client is, you know, the sales process, which is really just asking questions and finding out if it's right for them.
Yeah.
Right. So hopefully that whole process can kind of expedite that for you. So before I ask you a few of these questions and we wrap things up, I do want to hear, what do you feel like your kind of transformation has been since you, you know, first started getting licensed and things like that? You got in your salon versus where you're at are a year, you know, from when you first started. What do you feel like the transformation has been for you?
If I had to root it all back to one thing, it's definitely my confidence. And I know that sounds kind of like shallow as an answer, but I'm more confident in myself now. And not only am I confident like in my work and in my strategy and in my people skills, but I'm confident in my future income. I'm confident in my future. I'm confident about pretty much anything that life has thrown at me because I know I'm capable of, you know, overcoming it and I'm totally in control of it.
Yeah.
So really confidence is something that is like night and day compared to the beginning and to where I'm at now.
Yeah, I love that. Like, you know, confidence is so key to, you know, being able to do the things you don't want to do because, like, you know, I can think back to it, you know, a year or two ago, I would not, you know, be equipped to, you know, hop on a video call and talk to someone like that.
Yeah.
Have a conversation to sell, you know, my product or service to anybody. But you gain confidence by doing and taking action, right?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
You have to just really, you know, commit first and figure the rest out later. And then you start to build that confidence along the way.
Yeah. And no one's going to do it for you. I mean, you have to do it. You have to do it for yourself. If you want it, you have to do it, because no one's going to do it for you. No one's going to, you know, no one's going to be as passionate about it than you are, because it's your job. So, yeah.
That's awesome. That's super. So now what I'm going to do, I compiled those list of questions that some people were asking based on the space. And so I'll ask you, I've just got four questions here. So you can okay. How you like. One, what social system do you use? And is that working for you right now? Are you still trying out some new things?
Whatever, I think it's called Schedule-ly, Schedulicity.
We've been using Calendly.
Oh, Calendly. Gosh, I'm behind. Yeah, no, Calendly. Yes, no. Yeah, that's the best thing in the whole entire world. I think that is the number one thing someone should invest in whenever they start a business like this, because otherwise you will not be able to keep up with your actual life and your job, because your phone is going to be going off all the time. I think the robot and the scheduling thing are the two number one things that I would highly suggest for any person that's wanting to go into this industry, is a scheduling appointment booker thing.
Yeah. And we kind of like had to develop that as we went. We started out, you were using Square at first, right?
Mm-hmm. And that was not working.
Hard to manage. And then we kind of just started getting you accustomed with a Google Calendar, right? Which is really free, a Google Calendar.
And the best thing in the whole world.
And, you know, there is, I know, like a lot of software and booking appointment systems out there and things like that. But I think like we found that Calendly is the super awesome to use, especially for you, because it allows you, you know, when we do like the advertisements or, you know, use like the messenger bots and things like that, people can book their own appointments. And,
yeah.
You can ask like qualifying questions.
Yes.
To make sure that they'd even be qualified, right? And, mm-hmm. Right. Well, another question that someone did have too was, are you taking deposits on your appointments right now?
Yes. Beforehand, that was something I absolutely had to do, because I wasn't as high in demand yet, you know. Now, I mean, obviously I'm still taking deposits, because it definitely shows that they're committed and they're going to come in, or else they lose the put deposit. I highly suggest that for anybody, but you know, the more I get into it and the more I do it, people are more likely to come in for their appointments, because they're taking you more seriously. They're knowing you're not playing around. Like, you know, you just have to kind of develop your own brand and develop yourself. But I will not remove the deposits from my scheduling at all.
That was something we kind of decided to do along the way too. And it was cool because we can do it with Calendly, right?
Yeah.
I think Calendly, like, it comes out of, we cover it for you, but it's like only $10 a month. So if anyone's looking for a scheduler, like, it's like very, very useful. It just takes like a little time to set up. And if you want to put the deposit, like people can even do like deposits with like PayPal, or you can put, you know, a card on file and like,
yeah, mine's on PayPal. So it all goes to my PayPal. And it's so convenient, because I have enough people booking appointments and making deposits that I actually use PayPal to pay my monthly or my weekly rent for my studio.
Yeah.
So all these deposits are going straight to rent. It helps me budget better that way too, which is crazy.
I think a lot of people are worried that, you know, I don't want to do a deposit. It's going to like push people away and things like
no.
that. It hasn't really affected you, has it?
No, not at all. It's actually, I think it's actually made people take me more seriously, because before, you know, someone would book an appointment and I would call them, you know, the day before or, you know, a couple hours beforehand and confirm the appointment. I'd never hear from them again. But now, you know, they have to be serious to book the appointment, or, you know, they have to be serious to show up or cancel properly, you know, in a certain time, or they lose their deposit. So I think people take me more seriously. I think it's actually been very successful.
Awesome. Perfect. One more question I had. How are you getting exposure besides using social media? Are you doing some other things as well?
Like I said, I am in a salon with six other women. And a lot of those women, three of those women are big, big deals in Lubbock. So I guess the only other way other than social media is completely and totally networking. Because like I said, if it's not through advertisements or giveaways or things like that, it's through word of mouth. So it's 110% networking.
Awesome. Yeah. And you can kind of like, you know, leverage word of mouth from your advertising too. You know, once you get people at least talking to you, you know, maybe if they don't want to make the decision at one point, you can also kind of, you know, leverage that. Do you know anyone else?
Yeah, exactly.
There's like a lot of different ways to network. But I think like, you know, if you wanted to do it outside of social media, like, it's honestly just so easy to do with social media.
Yeah, it really is.
But there are some things you can do, you know, as far as, you know, just connecting with people and, you know, networking, things like that. But like, mm-hmm. like we said, like the power of social media, like you can message, you know, someone who's maybe doing exactly what you're doing. And you may think of them as a competitor, but maybe you guys can kind of align.
Exactly.
In some sense. And, you know,
yeah, that's exactly what I have done too with the other artists in the area. We have developed a friendship through social media because of that. So it's awesome.
Super cool. What do you feel has been, I guess we already talked about that, the most successful promotion? It was probably the giveaway. We still do those, right?
Yeah.
And it's not to give anything away. It's
really
cool. to get that mass amount of attention.
Yeah. I even have, oh, sorry, you can go ahead.
I was going to ask, like, we just did our third one now. Have you ever had a time where that hasn't paid off or turned into a return?
Not at all. That's actually what I was about to say is I had two strangers walk into my studio the other day, and the first thing they asked me was, hey, when are you doing another giveaway? Like, when are you, like, they look forward to it. It's not even like, I mean, obviously they're interested in booking an appointment down the road, but like, it's not just generated people who are interested. It's not just generated more leads, but people are actually staying like in touch with me and staying tuned in tune with me because they look forward to that.
Yeah.
The craziest thing.
The crazy thing too, like when we do like follow-ups to like email and stuff like that, like the open rates are huge. Like people want to see, you know, the tips that we provide in there.
Yeah.
And for those who don't know, like when we do the giveaway, we do like kind of a build-up follow-up until then, like kind of give them some info about microblading, about Kate and, you know, what she does, who she's helped, show some like testimonials, videos and things like that, mm-hmm. And pictures of work that you've done. And then we just let them know when the giveaway winner is announced. And then everyone who enters the giveaway gets like a special discount, right? Mm-hmm. And after that, we can follow up with them whenever we want. We have, you know, ability to email them. We can call them. We can text them. We can do whatever, right? You know, now we're getting to the point where you can do the same thing with Messenger too, where like, you know, you have an email list right now, which I think, you know, after this giveaway, we're creeping near like 1,000 in the list.
Really? Oh my gosh.
And so that's a lot of influence, right? Like if you ever go a month, we can just say, hey everyone, you know, I've got a couple of appointments left this week. Let me know if you're interested, talk more about it, answer your questions, things like that. And that ability to have that power is super, super.
Yes.
And if you ever weren't busy enough, you could always pick up the phone too, go the old fashioned way. And people actually like respond to that because they already have a connection with you through social media.
Yep.
And so I think, you know, the ability to use a strategy like that, mm-hmm. is, we've seen the results have been awesome.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Thing that we can continue to tweak that along the way too.
Mm-hmm.
Last question. As far as client retention goes, what kind of methods do you use to kind of get people to come back or also kind of turn into referral systems for yourself? You know, you can really leverage some clients to really
express. Yeah. That's actually something I just figured out the past few weeks is normally I would basically tell them I require a touch-up, you know, after a month from their first procedure. I really want them to come in to do the touch-up and things like that. With my new procedure now, I tell them it's totally up to them. If they want to, you know, come back and polish it up and make it look better and nicer, and if they want to get the finished product the way they expect it to, I suggest that they come in. They are more likely to come in if you suggest it than if you require it. So that's one really awesome thing to keep them coming back. And Katie mentioned, I think it was Katie or maybe it was you, I can't really remember, but one of you guys mentioned offering a little discount for their touch-ups if they leave a review. Everyone has responded to that. I mean, if they haven't, then 9 times out of 10, right before they book their appointment, they go on to Facebook and they're leaving me reviews and they're posting pictures and tagging me in it and things like that. So, I mean, even if you offer them $25 off, you know what I mean?
Want to help people, you know, and especially, you know, you help other people, and you know, like referral programs and incentives, like sometimes people are afraid to ask, you know, you know, referrals and things like that, but you can do it in a way that's like, hey, you help me, I'll help you, right?
No, exactly. And I've even done it for a few people. I'm like, oh well, if you refer people and they mention your name, I'll go into your paperwork and make sure you get, you know, a $25 off, you know, discount for every person that you refer. You get discounted, so people respond to that because they want, you know, it's easy to tell someone, hey, like, you should really go here. And then they get $25 out of it. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
That's been super useful. You'd be surprised.
Yeah, and that doesn't end up costing you anything, right?
Nope, not at all.
Get a new client, like that's the gap is very small. Like that's
yeah.
It doesn't cost you money. Make you money. So that's awesome. Mm-hmm. Well, I think we've been chatting here for a little bit. Those were most of the questions that I had that I felt you'd be best suited to answer. And so last thing that I like to do when we do these interviews, if you could say one key. I guess strategy, one key point, or one just key or secret that you feel would help a lot of people who you know, are looking to do what you do or looking to really, you know, kind of, you know, get really that ability to have that client base that you can, you know, book appointments on demand and things like that. What do you think is the number one thing that you would feel most equipped to want to share with everyone to make sure that they're able to kind of get through those sticking points?
I didn't really understand this concept until I actually owned my own business, but going through advertising, you know, in school and things like that, they would always tell you to build your brand.
Yeah.
I did not understand what that meant until I had my own brand. And now I think like the biggest tip out of building your own brand, like what that means to me to build my own brand, is just to be confident and consistent. People see that. If you're confident and you're consistent, you're going to you're going to build a brand that, you know, you're going to be confident in, and it's going to be what everybody else sees out of it too. So even if you kind of don't understand what you're doing, or, you know, you're in an awkward stage or a phase or something like that, you're going to get out of it, but, you know, approach it with confidence and, you know, do your research and kind of come out of it the way you need to. But, you know, just carry your brand the way you know how to do it. Just be yourself and just be consistent. And I don't know, consistency is a big deal. Yeah. So as long as you're doing it the right way, if you're being consistent, doing it properly, then it'll pay off, I feel like.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that's perfect advice. Consistency is key, right?
Yes.
Awesome. Perfect. Yeah. All right, well, thank you so much for your time here today. Where can people find you if they wanted to see what you're doing and check up on you? Where would be the best way to reach you?
Yeah, Instagram and Facebook both are really great. Both of my Instagram and Facebook, it's Cosmetique by Kate. Yeah.
Okay, to wrap it up, you talked about confidence, you talked about consistency, and you talked about professionalism, and making sure that you know what you're doing, and you study up, and you make sure that you're charging what you're worth as well.
Yep.
A point I've heard again and again from the people that I talked to who are business owners, you gotta charge what you're worth.
Yep. Don't sell yourself short.
Okay. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time today.